This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, the Weight of the Nation conference ended last week with some pretty dire warnings about the growing obesity epidemic in this country. They gathered thought leaders from the Center for Disease Control, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Institute of Health, all joining scholars and public health professionals last week to explore ways to combat this rising tide of obesity.
One of the predictions, that 42% of the nation's population will be obese or overweight by 2030 unless we turn this around. Not just unacceptable, but really the consequences, unthinkable.
There is encouraging news in tackling obesity as it's becoming a public health initiative across multiple disciplines and organizations throughout healthcare and public policy, from making improved school nutrition a priority to getting kids moving more to incentivizing weight loss programs for adults.
It's a problem that calls for a public policy approach. And on that note, this week, HBO's The Weight of the Nation documentary series begins airing. Now, that's a collaboration between HBO, the National Institutes of Health, the Institute of Medicine, and the CDC, all organizations with the power to promote policies that can really make a difference.
You know, we had the executive producer of the series on the show recently, John Hoffman. He let us know that HBO feels so strongly about this problem of obesity, they're making the multi-part series available to everyone who wants to access it, not just if you're an HBO subscriber. We encourage everyone to gather around with their families and friends and watch this important documentary.
Seems like everyone understands it's time for a holistic approach to the problem of obesity, and I think this public awareness campaign is a really incredibly positive first step.
And today, our guest will speak to new technologies that could lead the way to discovering the genetic markers for obesity and many other health problems and create an entire new paradigm of treatment and cures. Dr. Eric Topol has been on the forefront of his own kind of healthcare revolution, a highly regarded cardiologist. Dr. Topol has since turned his attention to the emerging disciplines of genomics and telemedicine.
Dr. Topol is the co-founder of the West Wireless Institute, which is exploring telemedicine protocols that are expected to revolutionize how healthcare is delivered and how consumers access it. Dr. Topol is also the director of the Scripps Translational Institute, which explores the world of translational genomics.
Dr. Topol will be talking about his published book, The Creative Destruction of Medicine, How the Digital Revolution Will Create Better Healthcare.
FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson looks at statements from the White House about children being protected from loss of insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
And if you have comments, you can email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to Dr. Topol in just a moment. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news. Health insurers will gain $1 trillion in new revenue over the next 8 years under the 2010 health care law, assuming it's upheld by the Supreme Court. That, according to a Bloomberg government study. And insurers led by the United Health Group would keep about $174 billion or $22 billion a year for profit and administrative costs. The money comes from U.S. subsidies to people purchasing insurance beginning in 2014. While legal scholars and political pundits continue to weigh in on the Affordable Care Act, one of its provisions is about to go into effect, which may gain the attention of the public, who are uncertain about the ACA and what impact it might have on their lives. Insurance companies who spend less than 80% of their budgets on actual delivery of care will now have to start offering rebates to insurance customers. Meanwhile, California's budget woes continue to deepen, leading Governor Jerry Brown to issue a budget that projects steep cuts across the board to shave $6 billion worth of spending. Health programs like Medi-Cal will not be immune, as well as health and wellness programs for women and children. Alzheimer's, the fatal form of dementia, now afflicting some 5 million Americans, is poised to double in numbers of those affected by the year 2050. The Institutes of Health announced two clinical trials this week that look promising. One of the studies announced uses a drug that blocks amyloids, the proteins thought to cause Alzheimer's. And the other study, a nasal insulin spray, has been shown to restore cognitive abilities in patients already afflicted with Alzheimer's. The Weight of the Nation conference last week and this week's airing of the multi-part documentary The Weight of the Nation on HBO is shining a glaring light on the growing problem of obesity, with 42% of Americans expected to be obese or overweight by the year 2030. Experts in the field are issuing new directives for combating obesity, beginning with the annual visit to the doctor. Experts say physicians should begin taking body mass index measurements, that is, the ratio of fat mass to lean mass, a person person carries as part of the general diagnostic, like blood pressure or testing for cholesterol levels. Tracking a patient's BMI will offer clinicians a clearer picture of where the patient falls on the obesity charts and can better recommend protocols for treating the condition before it leads to more serious health consequences. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this Headline News.
Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Dr. Eric Topol, a leading proponent in the use of genomics and wireless technologies to revolutionize medicine and improve health outcomes. He's the director of the Scripps Translational Science Institute and vice chair of the West Wireless Health Institute, whose mission is to find effective ways to reduce healthcare costs. Dr. Topol, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
It seems we're on the frontier of a new era in medicine, and you were a keynote speaker at the recent mHealth Summit and are considered a visionary and thought leader in applying emerging technologies like mobile and genomics to the practice of medicine. What's your vision for how these technologies can revolutionize healthcare?
Yes, well, this is what I would consider, you know, an extraordinary time, the most exciting time ever in medicine. I've been a student of its progress for almost three decades, but I would qualify this as a veritable kairos, you know, the supreme opportune moment, just because we have this amazing digital infrastructure and superimposed in the ability to intersect that with the medical applications of that.
Dr. Topol, in your book, The Creative Destruction of Medicine, you talk about the explosion of technology and entering the era of the digitized patient. And I was struck by the persistent theme of individualized medicine based on individual genomics that you see as one of the hugely promising areas. But I think it comes right when much of the healthcare community has just gotten comfortable with the concept of population medicine or planning and delivering health services based on understanding the data and the risks and the outcomes of groups of people or populations. So these are two pretty different approaches. How do you think healthcare, not just medicine, but public health and policy is going to reconcile and embrace these two very different approaches?
We have this newfound potential to understand each individual in a high-definition, granularity way we've never had before. That's the real extraordinary opportunity. That's the big difference today. You know, we couldn't sequence a human genome before in a matter of hours and in an affordable way and being able to interpret it. We couldn't track any physiologic metric, whether it's blood pressure, glucose, any vital sign, brainwaves, anything you can think of, continuously, remotely, and image things of any part of the body, you know, with handheld high-resolution scanning equipment. So these things, in addition to health information systems, give us the ability to understand each person. To do that for people, for persons, is a newfound, very unique time in our lives. And that's what really is the rebooting, this creative destruction idea, is that this goes beyond an innovative, disruptive force. This is something we've never been able to do before.
You know, I'm fascinated by the concept of creative destruction. I'm not sure it's a new term. It sounds like a Buddhist term. and you say it's a necessary starting point for the transformation that accompanies radical innovation. You make the point that our world of social networking and connectivity has been dramatically altered by digital devices, but in healthcare, not so much, right?
You know, it's really sobering regarding how difficult it is to change things in the medical community. It takes 17 years is the average for, you know, new things to get incorporated into daily practice. So here we have this, you know, unparalleled opportunity to change medicine. And the reason that I put the book together was, in fact, because my sense that we could do this within the medical community appears to be virtually impossible. We need the pressure to be exerted from consumer activism, I think, particularly in a world where there's just this phenomenal capability of social networking to bring people together to force change that's appropriate.
So, Dr. Topol, as you've clearly laid out, the mapping of the human genome, the digitizing of the patients can radically alter the way we treat patients going forward. But as you know, based on your own clinical background, how we treat patients is half the battle, and how patients engage with their own care and make changes is the other half of the battle that remains one of the areas to solve. What's the interaction of patients with this whole area of genomic medicine, in your experience?
The first place where that really comes up is in taking medications. So what we have now is the capability for many of the most commonly prescribed drugs to find out before the drug is ever taken, the first pill, whether or it might induce a very serious side effect or whether it actually will work in that individual. You know, will it be efficacious? So this is an opportunity for people, before they start a prescription, to say to their doctor, what about a genotype with respect to my DNA and how it will interact with that medicine, avoiding what can be very serious, even fatal side effects. Let me give you one example of that. In the country Taiwan, you can't get a prescription for Tegretol now, which is a very commonly used drug for many different neurologic conditions. But you can't get that drug prescription unless you get a genotype because of a potentially fatal side effect, which is called Stevens-Johnson syndrome. Whereas in the United States, no one gets genotypically screened.
We're speaking today with Dr. Eric Topol, world-renowned cardiologist and thought leader in the area of genomics, translational medicine, and wireless medicine. You just mentioned the area of safety, and certainly that's one area we like to focus in. But we also like to address making healthcare more affordable, something you're committed to at the West Wireless Health Institute. As healthcare costs continue to rise, how much will these technologies cost to implement, and how will they impact efficiency and cost?
How can we turn this around where we have this technologic revolution, whereas for the first time that it can lower costs? We have evidence of that today. At the mHealth Summit, I demonstrated actually on myself a couple of technologies. For one that does your cardiogram on the phone, basically for free.
We're excited about
yes,
that
we
one.
Are.
and you know, I do that for all my patients. As a cardiologist, I don't order cardiograms now. I just take my phone out and, you know, do the cardiogram on the phone and send that quickly to be deposited for the record. And the same thing with an echocardiogram. I don't even listen to the heart anymore because the portable echo, the V-scan that I use, I don't need to, you know, send patients except under unusual circumstances to get a full expensive echocardiogram. This is just part of the physical exam. It's free. And so, you know, in terms of the cost to the patient and the cost to our overall healthcare burden. So these are things that I use today that I think already demonstrate that new technology, markedly lower costs. I mean, there are over 20 million echocardiograms done each year. So there's at least several billion dollars could be saved just for that one use of ultrasound technology. So the opportunities here for cutting costs are really, I consider, remarkable.
Dr. Topol, as you may know, we devote a lot of attention with our guests to thinking about health reform as it's unfolding in the United States, and certainly to looking at the Affordable Care Act. And many say that the act is so deep and bulky, everything's in there but the proverbial kitchen sink, metaphorically speaking. But it doesn't seem to me that beyond electronic health records and the exchange of healthcare information through exchanges, which vitally important developments. But beyond that, I don't recall so much attention devoted to some of these areas that you see as absolutely vital to quality and cost in the future, genomics, the digitized patients. What's your take on the Affordable Care Act relative to these areas?
Well, virtually everything we've been talking about was omitted from the Affordable Care Act. There was, of course, some attention to health information systems and information technology, electronic medical records. But as far as genomic, as far as wireless sensors, advanced resolution, pocket miniature imaging devices, those sorts of things, these technologies were not incorporated. The concept of digitizing human beings wasn't even, you know, mentioned in that 2,000-plus page bill.
But isn't it fair to say that in the stimulus bill, there was the HITECH Act, which provided the sort of the foundational dollars for people to go to electronic health records? So on one hand, there's revolutionaries like you in terms of technology and genomics. On the other hand, there are Luddites who really simply don't have the basics of an EHR to receive the wireless transmission.
You know, that's right. There was, as I mentioned, the one thing that on the digital medicine front that was incorporated was, as you say, HITECH, which is about electronic medical records, which is going to be a slow process. It already, you know, planned a $40 billion to be spent on that, and it's not clear how much that's going to improve. But I think the other part that offered tremendous opportunities, you know, just going back to genomics for a moment, in cancer therapy, we've already learned in a few types of cancer how knowing the driver mutation can lead to the appropriate therapy and cures, the likes of which we haven't seen ever before. So the question is, why don't we have a national program where all patients with a new diagnosis of cancer get sequencing of their tumor get sequencing of their native DNA, their so-called germline DNA, find the driver mutations, and basically make a whole different look of how cancer is treated. If this was done in a wiki collaborative way, we would be well far along, and it wouldn't take nearly the types of funds that have to be put in for that electronic medical records to accomplish that task.
What's the balance here? Where do you see yourself falling out in terms of who's going to lead this transformation?
This is a public-based consumer health revolution, I think, that has to unfold. This is not going to come from the government and certainly not going to come from the medical community. But we have learned from examples of, for example, pharmaceutical company direct-to-consumer advertising, that the consumers can drive their own care. And if we start getting that type of Arab Spring, Occupy Wall Street type movements towards healthcare and towards a new precise way to render care and move towards the whole axis of prevention, which is possible when you know everything about a person that's relevant, then I think we can achieve this. I mean, I think that was the purpose of why I put in the effort to to do a book, just because I thought, well, finally, maybe we can actually get the activism here, which is potentiated now to a level we've never seen. Each week there's been another article which is just amazing. Like, one was, do patients have a right to access their laboratory data?
Right.
I say, how can you even ask that question? Then the week before that, it was, do patients have a right to their genomic data? And this is really embodies the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is the medical community doesn't even think that people should have right to their own DNA, to their data. I mean, something's wrong with this picture and this paternalistic doctor knows best attitude. We have to get over that.
Well, those are great points, and we've certainly had some very interesting discussions with colleagues about the right to lab data, but it looks like that one's been decided for everybody, and the patients have that right, so that's terrific.
Well, yeah, we're not seeing only, there's only like one health system that actually makes that real, Kaiser, but for the most part, most people can't access their lab data. You know, you probably saw the Annals of Internal Medicine papers about sharing the medical chart, the doctor's notes.
Yep.
And again, another example, why shouldn't people have the right to access their notes? And why are we asking these questions?
I noted in your book, you made the point that it really now is within the power of the consumer to have their genetic code mapped. It's not something that only the very wealthy could do. And yeah, I noted when I read that, interesting, but most people have not.
And we're right at this transition to whole genome sequencing. So the question is, well, why bother with a scan right now for a few hundred dollars when you could have your whole genome sequenced, every one of the 6 billion letters, and get a whole lot more information? So that's one part of this. The other one is that the American Medical Association, and I did write about this in the book, has doing everything they can to lobby the government to prevent people from accessing their data.
Right.
And this is a problem because, like I said, we're right in this transition where it's a very rich opportunity to get everything you could possibly know about your own sequence of DNA. And patients did very well to know their genome-wide scan data. Thousands of patients that we studied did perfectly fine without psychological trauma. But still, the AMA is taking that on, lobbying the FDA for people not to have their data directly, but only ordered through physicians.
Well, Dr. Topol, all this radical change also requires us to think about pretty big change in the education and training of the health professionals, right? And the health profession students. And we know if clinical medicine and nursing and the other professions are slow to change, the education can be even slower. What are you doing at Scripps? How is your work fundamentally transforming medical education to embrace this new arena?
Well, we do things to educate the medical community on genomics, and we have had specific programs whereby, for example, the very commonly used drug Plavix, where we got all the physicians that are involved in treating patients with Plavix educated about genotyping, and so that when patients have a stent placed, that they know that they're going to get genotyped, and the medication, the regimen they get, is going to be affected by that information.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping soon in the new year to start another program in diabetes genomics. So that is our plan, is not to try to do it all, but with specific programs, the right physicians and healthcare professionals are working in that to get them up to speed and to hopefully buy into a new order of medicine.
Dr. Topol, when you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
There's different fronts. We're starting to see this movement from gene hunting research to to now, you know, applying that information in the practice of medicine. And then, on the other hand, in parallel, there is a similar thing with the biosensor movement, which was in health and fitness, but is just now getting into the whole medical sphere. And so we haven't seen it integrated yet. That's, you know, one of the unusual vantage points that we have in La Jolla, because we've got these different institutes working together. So that whole idea of this panoramic view of each individual, you know, there isn't enough of that going on yet, but hopefully it will in the near future.
Today we've been speaking with Dr. Eric Topol, leading proponent in the use of genomics, director of the Scripps Translational Science Institute, and vice chair of the West Wireless Health Institute. Dr. Topol, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us on Conversations.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, this week we'll look at a claim from an Obama campaign film. This was the 17-minute video narrated by actor Tom Hanks. And the film has high praise for the federal healthcare law, obviously, but it takes a few liberties with the facts. For instance, it says that because of the healthcare law, 17 million kids could no longer be denied for pre-existing conditions. That implies that 17 million kids were being denied before the law, but that's not the case. Instead, that's the total number of kids in the United States, according to the administration's estimate, who theoretically could be denied coverage or charged more money if they were seeking coverage on the individual market. And that's where families would buy insurance on their own. But most kids aren't getting insurance from the individual market. With or without the healthcare law, many of those kids would be on their parents' employer-based plans, which wouldn't deny them coverage, and others would have insurance through Medicaid and CHIP. In fact, the Obama administration said that up to 140,000 kids did have coverage on the individual market before the law, and they had pre-existing conditions. It's true that the federal law mandated that insurance companies not deny coverage to children because of pre-existing conditions, so the Obama campaign would be correct to say that the law added protections for kids with pre-existing ailments. But 17 million weren't being denied coverage before the law was passed, as the campaign video implies, and 17 million wouldn't be at risk of losing coverage if the law hadn't been enacted. That's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
The human genome was only recently fully mapped, but already it's changing the way scientists and the average person are thinking about their health. A few short years ago, getting a personal gene mapping could cost up to $250,000. But now, with the price becoming reasonable for individuals, you can have your personal genetic code unraveled to determine your potential for a variety of diseases. And that has spawned a whole new crop of citizen scientists, armed with their own personal genetic information, to share this information and ultimately have an impact on public health. Melanie Swan founded DIYgenomics.org to provide a platform for interested citizen scientists to share their genetic data and crowdsource information. That idea being that they can offer scientists pre-aggregated communities of patients and healthy individuals, willing to share their information for research on disease identification markers and hopefully generate potential faster routes to cures and prevention. DIYgenomics.org, is already conducting several studies on everything from heart disease markers to staving off dementia. Millions are expected to be participating in social health networks as the population continues to age, providing a goldmine of essential data for medical research. Personal genomics testing for one's own health and sharing that information with science for the betterment of public health, now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.